Hey there, it's Mike Trimb, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been and it always will be.
Welcome to the program. It's White Line Fever. I think we're up to episode 87, and our first guest, and he's got a record coming out very soon. In fact, by the time you hear this, it may already be out. It's Charlie Benante from Anthrax. How are you, Charlie?
Hey, man. How are you? I'm doing great.
Now, what's it like before a record comes out like this? Are you nervous? Is it the same as it would have been 10 or 20 years ago, or is it a different feeling?
I still get nervous, you know. You know, it's something that I guess you're about to put something new out that you're very proud of. And, you know, you can feel very strong about it, but you don't know exactly what you have until you get the feedback from, you know, the people. You know, what do they feel about it, you know? How do they take what you worked on for all this time, and what do they have to say about it? So, yeah, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, you know, the album, of course, is For All Kings, but as you've spoken about in other interviews, Charlie, you certainly get the reaction a lot more quickly and than you used to, and in a different way, and it's sort of unfiltered now, isn't it?
Yeah, everything's so immediate, you know. Nobody waits for anything. I remember when I was younger, I was a member of, like, the Kiss Army or the Motor Headbangers, and you wouldn't get anything for a while. You know, you get a newsletter, and it's like, this news is pretty old by the time you get it. But nowadays, like, shit, man, everything's like, they want it yesterday, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and, like, I know you've said, and I've just been, you can tell I've been doing a bit of research for a change, but I know you've said that you sort of avoid scrolling down to the comments at the bottom of stories online, but when you've got a record about to come out, do you find yourself scrolling down to see what people think of it?
No, I don't scroll.
It seems like, and we'll talk about this a little bit, as I explained to you, we're sort of going to do this interview in three sections, but we'll talk about this in subsequent sections as well, and for the listeners, subsequent episodes. But is it fair to say that For All Kings, your new record, it seems to be quite inspired by recent events in the news?
Well, I mean, not musically speaking, maybe some of the lyrics are, I wouldn't say inspired, but maybe they're very topical. And I think, you know, if we live in this world and all of us are dealing with the same type of issues that, you know, like, we all feel it, basically. It's not just something that is just kind of, you know, for this part of the world. This is a global issue now. So I think we all can kind of tap into our feelings about certain situations, you know?
Yeah. And is the message, particularly, and I think I don't want to preempt the first song I'm going to play, but we're talking about Evil Twin now, I guess. But is the message there one of fury? It's just being angry at these people, or is it more sort of nuanced to that? When you guys sort of sat down to write that this song.
I think there's an anger, a frustration. I think there is a sense of some of these people want to look like martyrs when it's obvious that is not the case here. When you chose to go and inflict pain on a certain group of people, and those people have nothing to do with the cause you are for or against, you know, there is something fundamentally wrong with this.
And, okay, so I guess that we are going to play Evil Twin now. Is there anything else about the sort of genesis of the song, the way it came together, that you'd like to share with us, Charlie?
Well, this was like one of the first songs that was written for the record. The first three songs that I had when I brought it into the band, the first three songs were just fast, thrash, you know, songs. And these songs were just dying to get out. So the first song we wrote was the first song. song which is going to appear on the record, and then Evil Twin, and then another song off the record called Zero Tolerance. But this one, Evil Twin, was always the brother and sister songs to the first song we've written, which of course is called You Gotta Believe, and then this one is Evil Twin. So Evil Twin was always the title of this song, and it just stuck. So this song is great. Turn it up loud. Get ready to destroy your house, dancing around, and go for it. from Anthrax, and you are listening to White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. It's the final part of our interview with Dave Menichetti from Y&T. Now, some interesting album titles, Musically Incorrect and Endangered Species, around the grunge time. I just wondered, did you actually think it was all over at that point? Did you, I know the band did break up for 3 or 4 years, but have things turned out better than you thought they would? Or do you still sort of lament the fact that rock and roll, if it's not dead, it's kind of on life support as far as the mainstream is concerned?
Well, I mean, the reality of where the music business is right now is just what it is. And I would say, if I were to, you know, go back in time and think about, you know, what we're doing now and know what we're doing now and say, well, man, you know, is this where I was hoping it would be? Well, first of all, I wouldn't even think I'd be doing this for 42 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the number one. But beyond that, I'm totally happy with what's going on. I mean, certainly it would be a lot nicer if this style of music was still relevant as far as the nowadays radio is concerned you know, but that's just not going to be reality. I mean, every couple of years, every 10 years, every 5 years, whatever, there's always going to be a change in what's popular in radio and TV and so on and so forth. So you just have to figure that it's not always going to follow whatever you're doing. So that's okay. I'm all right with that. But the good thing is, for me, is the fact that we have come to a point, and this goes to something of what we were talking about before, about the internet and everything else, but where we kind of rule our own careers and our own destinies, and it feels good. It really does. I mean, of course, we're really ruling our own destiny because my wife manages the band.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I get involved as well. I mean, I do a lot of the behind-the-scenes work as well, but it's a good thing. It's a great thing because, you know, obviously we're more than happy because the fan base is still there to some degree. You know, we can still tour. We played 80 shows this last year, and
wow,
that's kind of where we're at in the last 5 to 10 years. And we just keep doing it, and we could play more shows if we wanted to every year, but this feels good. This is a good amount of shows. We're playing maybe 30 or 40 shows in Europe every year, and the same in the States and Japan. It's a good thing. And, of course, we got to come out the way of your area, as a matter of fact. I know that you're in London right now, but,
yeah,
you know, Australia and New Zealand, we've been, you know, always wanting to play there as well. And we're looking forward to always playing different new areas every year that we go out.
Did you ever come close to going to Oz?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, especially lately, we have a particular promoter that is giving us an offer of possibly going that way. So we're looking into it and seeing if it makes sense. And of course, we would always love to get there if we could. I think it would be in 2016. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was going to happen. Possibly 2017, but I, you know, we really don't know. Sometimes that. You know, it's like a bit of magic. You just really never know for sure until almost sometimes the last minute when things fall in place.
Two more quick things. Your wife has written a book where the names have been changed to protect the guilty as far as rock and roll is concerned. It's got some true stories in a fictional kind of narrative. Has she been caught out, or have you had people ring up and say, that was me, I know that was me, you didn't disguise me well enough?
not yet, but we have had plenty of people speculating on what characters might be what other rock stars. So, you know, and she hears that a lot. She goes, oh, you know, I know exactly who Mike Mays is. That's got to be this guy or that guy, you know. So, you know, and the thing is that Mike Mays is really an amalgamation of a couple of people. I mean, it's not one person, absolutely. It's maybe 30-40%, maybe 50% one person and little bits of a few other people or something like that, as is most of the people that I think are the characters in that particular book. So it's drawn on a lot of experience that she's been around, and of course experiences that I can relate to her over the you know, I mean, we've been married for 33 years, just about. So, you know, there's a lot of experiences that she's seen through my eyes that have given her plenty of things to write about. So there's a lot of reality in that book.
Okay. One last question, and then I'll get you to give us our last song. The last question is, will YMT ever retire? And then give us another song.
There is absolutely no plan on retiring. That's one of those things where if you look deep into your soul, you know, even though you can say, okay, well, you know, I'm this old and, you know, I've been doing it this many years, but it never really occurs to me anything like that. It just, life goes on every day, and it seems like it should still be going on the way it's been going on.
Yeah.
It just seems natural. It seems natural to me. To go out on stage. I would be really lost if I couldn't express myself to an audience on stage, because it's an emotional thing for me. And it kind of fulfills me. I mean, I have to say it that way. It sounds a bit cliche, but it's absolutely true. When we had sort of retired for a short period of time in the early 90s, and then we went back and played again after not playing for like 2 years, the difference in my psychological, you know, entire self was so different than the day after I woke up from playing a show after not playing for 2 years. It was like, oh, this is what I'm meant to be doing. And bottom line is, the band is still awesome. In fact, and I wouldn't even say still awesome. I would say, in some ways, probably maybe the best band we've ever been. That goes to a couple of things. I mean, number one, I've been very fortunate because my voice has always improved over the years rather than losing it. You know, as you get older, it could get a little bit more difficult to hit some of those higher notes to do some of the things you used to be able to do. But I've been blessed, I guess. I don't know. But I've also been taking care of myself. And I can say that I can do pretty much what I want to do vocally and with a lot more, a better voice than I've had in many, many years. So that's helped. And the energy is all there. And the band's tight. We really love what we're doing, and it shows at night. So, if given all of that, there's just no reason for me to retire. The obvious one to play usually is going to be "I'm Coming Home," because that was our video, and that's a great song, and we play that at every set. Also, one of the good songs on the record that a lot of people will shout out at every gig. The next one, which is a song called "Shine On."
Okay.
This we wrote about fans, actually, and women fans in particular.
Okay.
And that being, you know, no matter what your age or no matter what, you still feel like it's a special thing to come out and see a show, and you know, this is what we want you to do, is to get your best on and come out and shine on with fans.
Shine on for me.
White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, WLF Podcast. I'm here with Tony Pultour, and we are talking about International Rugby League, I guess, because by the time you hear this, the Pacific Test and all that will be over. How are you, Tony?
Yeah, good, thanks, Steve.
Now, the situation at the moment is interesting, isn't it? Because the clubs are getting more and more powerful, and it's harder and harder for guys to get released. You and I are old enough to remember where if you passed a medical with a rep team, you had to play. But now the clubs can pull you out for no reason at all. What does the future hold, do you think? I know I started with a hard question. I didn't ease you in. But
It's always tough, you know, because you want to see your best players playing for their countries. And it's always hard. I can understand, you know, from a club's point of view, you know, that they do pay the players their salary and things like that. But, you know, in saying that, I do, you know, I'd love to see, you know, sometime in the future that all the players, you know, all the best players are playing for their country.
Now, by the way, BJ Leilua is not playing in any game this weekend. What's the story there?
I'm not too sure about BJ. All I know is that he was at Canberra. I think Canberra haven't allowed him to play this week, so... I don't know too much.
Do you think this mid-season test is just going eventually? I mean, the rep weekend, I believe, under the new TV deal is gone anyway. So it's almost like the NRL are kind of phasing it out, isn't it? So, but do you hold out hope that at the end of the year we're going to see full-strength teams, or do you still think that's going to be difficult?
Yeah, I think normally at the end of the year, well, the only thing is that by the end of the year, you know, you will get the same thing happening, you know, with the clubs wanting players to take care of injuries and whatever they're carrying through the season. So, you know, but, you know, in saying that, it could be a good thing too because, you know, the players will be available, seeing that the season will be finished at that time. And, and we could, you know, potentially get all the players playing for their country.
Do you think... What are you hopeful next year with Samoa in the World Cup? You must think that no team in the four nations, the fourth team's never won a game, but Samoa came close twice. So you must have your hopes up about next year if you can get a good side out here on the field.
Yeah, exactly. The good thing now about Samoa is that, you know, well, a lot of the Pacific nations, we've got a bit of depth there, you know, and... you know, we showed in 2014 that we can, compete with at the highest level and compete with the top sides, top nations, and we're holding good stead, for the World Cup next year, and we're building nicely, I think.
Thanks for joining us, Tane.
Cheers, mate. Thanks. Okay.
Tears in my eyes. No, I don't want to say goodbye. I'm a look at the
Hi, this is Frankie Pillar from the Darkness. You listen to White Line Fever. Okay, welcome back to the program, and it is the final part of our interview, redone part two, version 2.0 interview with Joel Hoekstra. Welcome back, Joel. You're talking in the last episode about a project that you're going to do with Michael Sweet. You said there's three other projects, so I take it there's some of them that you can't talk about. Everyone asks you about what are Whitesnake doing. I suppose the story's the same, but it's for David to tell us, not you. Is that basically the situation?
Yeah, pretty much so. I think the cat's out of the bag that we're going to be doing some shows. Mm. There's shows that have been announced already, so I think I can safely say that we'll be doing some shows in 2016. Everybody should watch the tour schedule, and I can say that I've been out to David's to work on music with him, and I think there's some more of that's going to be happening here in the immediate future. So I'll let David fill everybody in on specifics, but yeah, that's the Whitesnake's going to be active this year for sure.
With the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Deep Purple's induction, perhaps the Purple album came out 12 months too early. I mean, there's obviously, if David's going to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, maybe he's going to perform with a version of Deep Purple, and then you go out on tour and play the Purple album. It's perfect timing, isn't it? You sort of got out of the gates a little bit early, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess so. I'm really happy for David and all the Purple guys. Turns out it's long overdue, huh? Mm, boy,
yeah.
Took long enough. But good for them. And I'm just looking forward to working with Whitesnake in any capacity, honestly. And, and the Purple album had already been, the wheels were in motion by the time I came on board. I mean, the pre-production was basically already done. Mm. So it was sort of like when I joined the band, I was like, all right, let's record this album.
I remember, I haven't actually asked any questions yet that I asked last time, but one question I do remember I asked last time and you gave quite an interesting answer was the controversy, particularly here in England, about the Purple album, and I know David very angry with classic rock and he didn't want to do interviews with them because of the review it gave. And I suppose in America, it's different. Deep Purple don't have the same kind of legacy or whatever. They're not perhaps placed on as high a pedestal. How do you look back on that controversy? And I know you said that you the reviewer gave you your album a very good review, so how do you look back on that?
It's all stuff that's beyond my control, really. I think people can either check it out. I mean, I think there's something to be said for it. The songs are definitely muscled up and reworked. It was definitely a creative reworking. It wasn't like we're gonna re-record the stuff note for note to try and get new masters out there. So I think a lot of bands are doing that these days. I mean, it was a difficult album to make creatively in many ways. We reshaped a lot of the songs, and definitely for me, I was always trying to come up with a second guitar part or different sounds and textures, because Reb was covering the single guitar part from those original versions on most of it by the time I came into the picture. So I had a lot of fun. It was a great way for me to get acclimated with the band.
Mm.
And get used to working with these guys. And you know what, man? It did lend itself to making really a cool, one-of-a-kind tour in terms of being able to hear the Whitesnake hits, but also, like, these Deep Purple songs from the Mark III, Mark IV era that nobody's performing these days. So, people can have their opinions, but I think there was plenty of positives that came from it. It made for a really unique tour and a cool album and an alternate version of these songs that people can listen to. And I think it brought an awareness to that material as well, quite frankly, because nobody had been really playing that music. And it was really something that David wanted to do as an artist. I think he was visualizing it as closure for his career, but I think he's finding himself with this lineup having so much fun that I think he wants to keep the ride going a while longer.
Right, so you thought maybe he approached the Purple album as Whitesnake's last record.
I think maybe in his head there was part of it that it was going to be that. I don't think he was 100% set on that, but I think he's on record as saying, I think in his mind, maybe he was thinking this is a perfect way to close it all out. But as it turns out, he's having a good time with us, and we are having a good time as a band. playing, and that last tour was awesome, man. I mean, it really was a great run. Everybody got along so great, and it's just all laughs, and the band is sounding great. It's a great lineup to be a part of, so I think David's feeling the same way and is looking to keep things going.
And, I mean, the previous two White... I'll let you go in a minute, but the previous two Whitesnake records were great. You know, there's some great songs on there, and just the way the industry is now, I guess... he must have been, well, could have been excused, and the band could have been excused for being a bit disillusioned that they just kind of get lost, these records now, and maybe that was, I don't know, is he now, or is the band now ready to revisit original material and pick up where they left off, you know?
Well, yeah, like I said, I think David's going to have to fill everybody in on any specific stuff, but I think there's definitely... I'm not exactly sure what he's on record in terms of saying about the future of this, but we've worked on some music, and I think that we're going to continue to do so. So we'll just see the way it all unfolds.
Well, I do have a heap more questions, but look, I'm not gonna push my luck. I appreciate you doing this again. Thank you very much, Joel. And what song can we finish with?
How about Until I Left You?
Awesome.
Mine.
everybody. This is Joel Hoekstra of Whitesnake, and you're listening to Steve Mascord on White Line Fever.
I'm supposed to be another rugby league guest here, but you just got me. I guess I'm half a rugby league guest. Thanks for listening so far. I think it's been a good show. I know they do tend to be in gestation for far too long now because I've got so much on writing a book and got to earn a living, getting married, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But really, I just got sick of waiting for another rugby league guest, so I just thought I'd rip off this little segment. And we'll move right on. Nathan James is a final guest. He's has some really interesting things to say, particularly about the inglorious song High Flying Gypsy. Before we move on with some new music, I want to remind you to please, please, please go to iTunes, leave a comment, leave a rating. It helps us get noticed. If you put a song request in there, I will play it within reason. Whitelinefever.ning.com is the home of the program. Come and join up there. Put up lots of blogs, all that sort of stuff. Also, on whitelinefever.ning.com, you can either hit the donate button. That would be hugely appreciated. I'll thank all the donors in each episode. Or if you're going shopping on Amazon, just hit the Amazon button and I get a little commission. You don't pay 1 cent extra. As I said, a lot going on at the moment. I'm sitting here at my computer in Sydney and I'm moving rugbyleaguehub.com from a free WordPress-hosted site to a self-hosted site, which allows us to do a lot more cool things. Unfortunately, a lot of really good journos are out of work with redundancies and stuff now, so it'd be really good to pick up the slack there. Not mentioning any names at this point. The book's coming along okay. It's hard to do during the season, but I'm not going to whinge. I want to thank, again, everyone who's supported the book. Hudson Birds came to the football with me the other day. He got that reward, a day at the football, if you call it a reward. there's still a few more people who I've got to take to the footy. So if you've bought that reward, please get in contact with me if you haven't heard from me. I'm going to be offering some books for pre-sale when I'm confident that I've sort of got the project on a good, even keel. At the moment, it's up and down, you know. Anyway, WLF Podcast on Twitter has just got 1,000 followers. So again, thanks to everyone for that. Nathan James is up after the break from Inglourious, final part of his interview. Coming up in future episodes, we've got Scorpion Child. We also have Cherie Curry from The Runaways. Some really good stuff coming up in future episodes, and I'll try to get them out there. That's what doing this segment now into my phone is. It's about getting it out there and getting on with it. So hopefully the next episode won't be too far away. Here's some new music from Cheap Trick, No Direction Home, after this Nathan James of Inglourious.
Getting You're listening to White Line Fever. This is Nathan James from Inglourious.
Okay, final part of our interview with Nathan from Inglourious, and we're speeding through this because his time is very, very valuable. I want to know, what is a high-flying gypsy? What is it? Who was the person who inspired that song? It really struck me, even straight away, first listen, just lyrically, it was unusual. Someone who's running from the law but might save your life. I'm intrigued.
The might save your life is a bit of sarcasm, actually. He wouldn't save your life. He's actually a bit of a dick. It's about someone who is very close to me, and it's weird talking about it. I haven't talked about it before. It's about someone who's done something really awful in my life, and he thinks he's amazing. He thinks he's helpful. He thinks he's the best person in the world. He thinks he does everything for everyone, when in fact he's just a bit of a crook and an idiot, and he really let lots of people I love down, and that's why I wrote it.
Does he know you've written a song about him?
No.
All right. Do you think will eventually?
I don't talk to him.
All right, okay.
So it's very easy. But it's a good song, and I like the song, and I co-wrote that with Al Petrelli from TSO, Megadeth, Alice Cooper. So, yeah, it was special. It's a special song for me, yeah.
So you're on Frontiers. How long are you on Frontiers? How many records are you going to do? What's the plan? Do you have a plan of attack? Is there a strategy?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say. let's just get this one out first. Let's focus on getting this one out, and then let's see. But we're signed up to do another one.
And very quickly, what is, like, is the aim to get on more supports like this, and is that the main focus, or is it, I mean, like I was saying to Sue, like Blackstone Cherry are an arena band in this country. I mean, they're going to Australia in June, and they'll be playing pubs. So that is kind of like the market, isn't it? Like I know that you've obviously got some appeal in the classic rock, and you're getting airplay on Planet Rock and all that sort of stuff. But if the kids who are posing for photos out there next to your stand, if enough of them get into the band, then you're looking at sort of the Blackstone Cherry kind of territory, aren't you? You know.
Yeah, hopefully that's what we want to do, our own headline tours, and it'll be nice to cut our teeth a bit more. You know, this is only our sixth gig ever.
Mm.
That's not bad, is it? Really?
No.
We've played the Kentish Town Forum with the Winery Dogs. I've taken every day as it comes, but we've got some really cool festivals booked in here in the UK and abroad, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, next year, new album and big tour, I think.
Because we're almost finished, I've been putting this question at the end of every interview, and I haven't been putting in the podcast or recording it, but I will, because we've got to go. I'll say now, in the time you've from learning how to good voice to now, What have you learned? Have people changed around you? And I'm actually asking everyone this, about what they've learned about sort of human nature by becoming, getting some infamy. And I suppose they've seen the best and the worst of humans. I know this is kind of a tough question to ask, but have you found, like, if you say this is a local gig, there's people hanging around there tonight that you've known for years, do people treat you differently?
Yeah, I think they do. Not like things like this, but when you're on TV, you really do realise who your friends are, you know? When there's 10 million people watching and everyone's your best friend the day that you win, but the day that you get kicked out, you know, you feel like the loneliest person in the world. So I'm kind of used to that on some level, but I really don't think this will ever see a bad day, because I'm not going to let it. I'm very, very positive, and I'm 100% dedicated to this, and there will not be a bad day.
Has that experience of being on TV in front of 10 million people made you feel better about, human nature, or has it made you feel more cynical about it? I know this is, I'm not normally going to include this in the podcast. I was going to ask you at the end, but I'm doing it now. Like, has it made you more cynical about people and more suspicious of people's motivations?
Kind of, but I just don't care. I think you get to a stage where you realise that you're going to meet a few idiots, and you have to just deal with them. Just hope they're not in your band.
Okay, third and final song. Thank you for your time, Nathan. Very much appreciate it.
No problem.
I'm actually in the dressing room on my knees, and it is the first time that's ever happened to me. But anyway.
This song is called High Flying Gypsy.
A high-flying gypsy, got no need to settle down. He wears a coat made out of leather and a hat he calls a crown. He's always running from somebody, that somebody's from the law. And when they
the man hung from the tree. And when you get him, you will realize that's a talisman. You see, he's always drinking from the bottle, burning candles from both ends. Only thing he can remember is when lasses are his friends. Something's hidden here behind the scenes. But this magic is real, and you will see that he might just save your life. There's only one, and he would help you if you need it. He has never been undone. Yes, his magic is real, you will agree. 'Cause he might just save your life. Oh.
I got a white line fever. Going around land down under. Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. But I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. And you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say. Okay, come on down and rock on.